This talk is called Following the Footsteps of the Enlightened Beings, and it was given to at a conference for the Australian Sangha Association in June 2006.
He wrote it and it was read out.
He wrote it himself
and then somebody read it out.
So if you haven't seen it before, it's got his writing on one side and pictures on the other. Siam, or Thailand, is highly renowned all over the world for being one of the countries where Buddhism is thriving and flourishing. This is in part due to our ruler, His Majesty the King, giving royal patronage to the national religion. As a result, Buddhism has flourished, especially in the areas of the study of theoretical knowledge and Dharma education. Still, our country has not yet been able to present to the world an acceptable example of somebody who has gained the highest spiritual fruits of Buddhism. Having emphasized the spreading of theoretical knowledge, we have yet to take the next step to spreading the practice of Dharma. If we have succeeded in this, we will be truly following the footsteps of the noble enlightened beings who we have learned and studied about so much. We have yet to send one of those who have received the full fruits of practice to prove to the world that the path of Buddhism is capable of extinguishing the suffering in the hearts of beings. Just in the same way as modern science is able to relieve the physical pain of the body. Day by day, our lives are coming closer to ending. Therefore, we must strive to follow the footsteps of the enlightened beings and incline towards the highest fruits of Buddhist practice. Thus, we will fulfill our duty as monastics, the obligation to abandon all things that are obstacles to the ending of suffering, to cast them off completely. In contrast to this is the lifestyle of settling down in huge, big residences, the life of a householder who needs to take care of all kinds of possessions and has many worries and lots of responsibilities. Being a householder or a monastic is not defined by the type of cloth worn, be it that of a layperson or a monastic. The way we lead our lives defines us and the spiritual qualities we have. This is independent of the external form or our special status as monastics. Anyone who lives without a house, who does not possess anything apart from the clothes he needs for covering his body, only has a single vessel for taking his meals, and is solely intent on a life free from suffering, can rightly be called a homeless one, irrespective of whether he wears lay or monastic clothing. Coming from the heart, the principles of Dharma are not aiming at taking status or anything external as essential. We need to maintain the Dharma in our hearts, develop an internal resource of refined thinking, and have the dedication to act accordingly. This means to follow the footsteps of the enlightened beings in our actions. If we keep following the footsteps of the enlightened beings, we will eventually discover a science of the mind, spiritual knowledge, that can be of great benefit for the world. We will be able to maintain this lifestyle with dignity in its original form, bring it to the West and create something useful for the world. In fact, the world has tremendous thirst for truth and happiness. Are we going to lay down, waiting for our habits to change by themselves, or are we going to try and do what can be done by human strength and effort, the way the Buddha taught us to? If studying Buddhism by the books was all we needed to do, leading the holy life of a Buddhist monastic wouldn't be anything much profound. Nevertheless, to study the books with the motivation to find a way out of suffering seems worthwhile. But if our primary motivation to study is based on ambitions for gain and fame, we begin the holy life in a wrong way and are likely to go astray. So can we see the danger in this? Isn't it obvious which path leads towards the world and which one leads beyond? How can we hope to be able to pick up the fruits of the noble science of spiritual qualities if we only study the books? Our teacher, the Lord Buddha, was born on the bare earth under a sala tree in Lumbini. He was enlightened, sitting on the bare earth, with just a thin cushion of grass beneath, under the Bodhi tree in Buddhagaya. He entered final nibbana lying down on the bare earth under a sala tree, with merely his outer robe underneath. Nothing more than that. His whole life the Buddha spent on the earth and under trees. This tells us how withdrawn the Buddha's life was. He didn't get involved with using extravagant dwellings. That he was able to realize the truth about the world of the mind is due to just this dwelling in seclusion. If we have never given it an honest try to live in places of seclusion, we shouldn't just assume that we lack the opportunity to cultivate the wonderful qualities that the Buddha taught about. We should cut off the fetters in our hearts that bind us to seeking company, entertainment, and a life of pleasure. We should maintain that it is an honor to frequent the kind places of seclusion that the Buddha himself used with great results and recommended to all of us. And we should hold our being ascetics of the Sakyan clan in honor through our wholehearted determination to act with honesty towards others and towards ourselves and towards other people. Then we will reach the fruits of the noble science of the mind and unchanging truth. Our hearts will be liberated, free from slavery to anything in this world. We will experience a power mightier than the sciences of the physical world, a power that is capable of bringing the world to lasting peace and coolness. Isn't the constant lack, hunger and thirst of the world aroused by the temptations and stimulations that modern science constantly keep inventing anew and anew? The scientists of the mind, the noble enlightened beings, have already taught human beings for over 2,000 years to be friends with each other, irrespective of status and position in society. People should grant each other freedom and equal rights, as life dependent on the physical body is the same for all human beings, and animals as well. In the old days, people received education in the science of the mind since they were born. They were taught the science of the mind by their fathers and mothers straight from the beginning. The training of the mind led everyone to happiness and comfort, rich and poor people, the ones still likely to live long, and the ones bound to die soon. Whoever reaches the end of the training in the science of the mind will be able to experience happiness, peace, and coolness for the rest of his life. Even people facing death feel the same peace and happiness as the ones that don't yet have to die. The refined happiness one experiences will only end when finally the physical body passes away. Modern science is different. It constantly causes people to suffer in all kinds of ways because it keeps stimulating the wish for more and more without knowing an end. Just like when somebody is actually full after he has eaten, but still something that he likes even more comes and tempts him. Taking it, he experiences suffering burning him up inside. The wealthy and the poor suffer all the same in this matter until they eventually get a taste of the noble science, a taste of the way of the life of enlightened beings. Why is it that people don't take this wonderful medicine that can ward off all those diseases which arise in the mind? The physical diseases are the duty of modern medicine. Let us make this distinction for the sake of easier understanding. The suffering of the mind is really like a disease. Desire, never being satisfied, never knowing enough, is the virus which causes it. And peace and seclusion is the medicine which cures the illness. Those who lead their lives according to the practices of the enlightened beings are the ones who provide others with the medicine, helping them after they have cured themselves. So let us learn the noble science, the science of truth, and help each other for the highest benefit and happiness for the world, ourselves included. To do this, we need to live our lives in a truly fresh and soothing, cooling way, both externally and internally, deeply bright and radiant, representing a symbol of coolness and tranquility for others. We will be an example for those human beings who experience suffering weighing heavily on their hearts, whose eyes are dull and dark due to the internal consumption by the fires of greed, anger, and by the frustration of their wishes. Only externally representing the force of peaceful ascetics, but internally being full of thoughts of lust and craving, we won't be capable of giving the world an example. We will be like the blind leading the blind. We should create as much benefits for others as possible with our exemplary conduct, even though there won't be any reward for it. By the power of our kindness, other people will develop friendship towards one another as well. We should teach the world by sacrificing our own happiness, giving an example of how one can live well, using only the bare necessities. We can collect what we have saved by refraining from luxury and use it for the benefit and happiness of those other people that are still suffering. All through history, in any day and age, a fully enlightened being, an arahant, would never spend his life in laziness or take advantage of other people by hiding away from society in order to search merely for his own happiness. In truth, the arahant merely waits for opportunities to give others the example of a truly happy person. All the time, all his life, the arahant is a model of patient endurance, resolute strength, and diligent effort, even for people that aspire only to worldly success. Take a look at the process of becoming an arahant. It starts with making the same resolution the Buddha himself made. Bhikkhus, all of you should bring forth effort by determining in your minds, even if my blood and flesh all dries up and only bones and sinews remain, if I have not attained the fruits that are attainable by strength and exertion of energy by human beings, I won't stop this effort of mine. This resolution shows that people should be taught to be able to bear with and endure things firmly, relentlessly, and continuously. These qualities reflected in the way of training of the arahants should already be established from childhood. From the beginning, children should be taught straightforwardness, honesty, gratitude, and the knowledge of how to make their minds happy, so the viruses and diseases of the mind are removed straight from the source. A child will eat what one gives it. Once it has grown up, it will be its own master, and one cannot correct it anymore and all the way to its death. If it wasn't taught to be content with little, it will end up being lazy. Those who have attained to arahantship will always continue to put forth effort for the benefit of others. They continue to be an example and to teach to patiently endure what nature brings, hot or cold weather, for example. They aim at perfecting what is beneficial, supporting only the essential. For old people, they are an example of somebody whose life ends happily and peacefully, without any struggles. For an arahant, it is normal to be an example of somebody who is able to sustain his smile in the midst of all the flames of a fire spreading out and burning him relentlessly. To let other people see the example of one's actions, to live so they can see, is much better than to teach using merely words. Therefore, let all of us follow the footsteps of the enlightened beings together. True benefit, happiness and peace will then arise for all of us and for society as well as for our country and for the world.